This is Nightly Business Report with Tyler Matheson and Sue Herrera.
On the move, healthcare stocks had a wild day after Senator John McCain dealt a blow to the Republican-led repeal bill.
Bad week. Apple has its worst week in almost a year and a half, just as the newest model of its flagship product hits stores.
Taste test. Would you eat a burger created in a lab? Silicon Valley is betting you will. Those stories and more tonight on Nightly Business Report for Friday, September 22nd. Good evening, everyone. I'm Sue Herrera.
And I'm Bill Griffith, and tonight for Tyler Matheson, coming to you this evening from the New York Stock Exchange. In fact, here on Wall Street, there was drama in the healthcare sector today. That group was the worst performing sector in the S&P 500 on growing uncertainty over the Republican-led healthcare bill, as Senate GOP leaders were looking to nail down final votes on their effort to repeal the Affordable Care Act. United Health was a big drag on the blue chip Dow index as a result today. But then, just after midday, came that statement from Senator John McCain that he would vote no on the measure. That followed reports that fellow Republican Senator Susan Collins is leaning against the bill. And with the chance of passage declining, stocks moved. Health insurers, including United Health, pared some of their losses and finished mixed. Hospital stocks also got a lift on the day. And by the end of trading, the Dow Jones Industrial Average lost just 9 points, well off the lows of the session, closing at 22,349. The NASDAQ added 4. The S&P was up 1 today.
And then there's Apple. It had a rough day, which capped a rough week, its worst since last year, and its worst product launch of the week of the iPhone era. The latest version of the iPhone hit stores today, and it appears that there was less fanfare and shorter lines than for previous launches. But some say that may be due to poor reviews or the yet-to-be-released iPhone X, and the simple fact that more people are buying online. But CEO Tim Cook is pleased with the way things are going.
I am thrilled. Here's what we're seeing right now. The watch with LTE, the Series 3 watch, we are sold out in so many places around the world. And we're working really hard to meet demand. We've sold out of iPhone 8 and 8 Plus in some stores, but we've got good supply there. And so you can see what's going on here this morning. I couldn't be happier.
Investors, though, a little bit less enthused. The stock was lower today and off about 5% for the week.
And seeing a move like that in Apple could make investors a bit nervous, since many of you own shares outright or through a mutual fund or a retirement account. But is there reason to be concerned? Joining us tonight to talk about that, Piper Jaffray's senior research analyst, Mike Olson. Mike, good to see you again. Welcome back.
Thank you.
You often get a move, a pullback in Apple shares when they introduce a new product, but certainly this has been a pretty big move this time around. Is something else going on?
Yeah, there's a couple things going on. One is definitely the phenomenon that you're describing, which we call sell the news phenomenon after a big announcement. You know, there's a catalyst here that a lot of investors were anticipating, and once we get past that catalyst of the announcement of the new products, you sometimes do get a sell-off. Now, the second thing going on is clearly the less hype around iPhone 8. And we think that that is directly tied to more interest in iPhone 10. Essentially, what's happened here is Apple's kind of stolen their own thunder for the iPhone 8 with the iPhone 10 and this staggered launch. So with that product coming out in November, we expect to see a nice mix shift towards more iPhone 10 users.
So if that is the case, and we should note that that is a more expensive product, the iPhone 10, would a pullback like this week in Apple perhaps be a buying opportunity in anticipation of strong sales of the 10?
Exactly right. That's what we think, and we raised our price target today. In fact, based on our expectations that, as you mentioned, the iPhone 10 being a higher priced product will drive overall iPhone pricing higher, which will then drive revenue and profitability higher. So based on all those factors, we raised our price target today, and we do think this pullback will prove to be a buying opportunity over the long term.
But what happens to that iPhone 8 that seems to be getting lost in the sauce here? It has had rather tepid reviews for being incremental, not revolutionary in terms of what's being offered here. And then you have the people waiting for the iPhone X. Was this a mistake for Apple to introduce these simultaneously virtually?
Well, I think the issue is really just the lag in the iPhone X availability. And this is unlike any release we've ever seen before for iPhone. And I think as a result of that, we are going to see a bit of weakness here for iPhone 8 in the September quarter. So what we may see is a September quarter that's not quite as robust as what some investors are hoping for. But I would say hang on for the December and March quarters, because in general, we should see an improvement, as I mentioned, in iPhone pricing as the mix shifts more towards iPhone X.
Maybe we'll all have to be patient, I guess. Mike Olson with Piper Jaffray, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Well, overall, the stock market has basically shown its resilience, because this week investors witnessed a war of words between the U.S. and North Korea like few have seen before. The market was also tested when the Federal Reserve said it would start to pare back its stimulus program beginning next month. Despite those concerns, the Dow and the S&P were both higher on the week. Bob Pisani takes a closer look at the issues the market is trying to digest.
It's been a choppy trading week, but the markets still managed to score a string of record highs. Three key themes were the top of mind for investors this week. First, North Korea. Geopolitical fears were back on the table as the war of words between President Donald Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un heated up. Kim said Trump would, quote, pay dearly for his comments bashing North Korea at the UN earlier this week. And North Korea's foreign minister fanned the flames by saying the hermit nation might test a hydrogen bomb in the Pacific Ocean to teach the U.S. a lesson. We saw a slight pullback in stocks and a slight uptick in gold, but the reaction seems to be more muted with each passing threat. Despite the clear danger, there is some fatigue in the markets about all this back and forth. The second big theme was Puerto Rico and the aftermath of the hurricanes, the several hurricanes that have hit the U.S. recently. CarMax, for example, reported earnings today and said it closed six stores in Houston for a week after Hurricane Harvey. Hurricane Maria may brush the east coast of the U.S. in a few days. Finally, perhaps the biggest single mover of the market was higher interest rates this week. Federal Reserve hinted that another rate hike was just around the corner, and the yield on the 10-year hit its highest level in a month. The 2-year yield soared to a 9-year high. That gave a hefty boost to banks, which were among the week's big winners, but dealt a blow to utilities and real estate. Those were more defensive names. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Bob Pisani at the New York Stock Exchange.
And maybe no surprise, those rising tensions with North Korea lifted the defense sector this week. The defense and aerospace ETF itself rose about 4%. But, you know, North Korea isn't just an issue that Wall Street is watching. Also, our allies in South Korea are watching carefully. And Sherry Kang is in Seoul for us tonight.
Some explosive words going around in New York this week at the U.N. General Assembly. North Korean Foreign Minister Lee Yong-ho told reporters that North Korea could test its hydrogen bomb in the Pacific Ocean in an unprecedented level. Now, this is according to South Korea's Yonhap News Agency. Now, to put this into context, though, the foreign minister of North Korea was asked by reporters about what Kim Jong-un meant by, quote, the highest level of hardline measure in his statement that came out in his reaction to the Trump speech at the United Nations earlier in the week. Now, North Korea's top diplomat did add that he did not know Kim Jong-un's exact thoughts. North Korea conducted six nuclear tests so far, and all of them have been done out of underground tunnels in its territory. Now, Kim Jong-un earlier in the day criticized the Trump speech, saying that it did not help diffuse tension in the region, and also added that U.S. President Trump was, quote, unfit to hold the prerogative of supreme command of a country. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Sherry Kang in Seoul.
Strong words. And as the rhetoric between the U.S. and North Korea intensifies, what should investors be watching? Here to offer some insight is the Eurasia Group's Asia Director, Meredith Sumper. It's nice to have you with us tonight, Meredith. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start. First of all, the rhetoric that we have heard this week is like nothing we've really heard before between the U.S. and North Korea. But the market has not reacted as vehemently as some thought it would. What would you be watching in the next move between the U.S. and North Korea that investors might need to be aware of?
Sure. Well, certainly we have seen many different cycles of escalating rhetoric and tensions between the U.S. and North Korea. And so investors are likely watching this cycle for clues as to where things are likely to head next. I would suggest that investors take a look and see how U.S. military national security advisors are speaking to President Trump about the way to conduct the diplomacy, the maximum pressure diplomacy campaign to compel Kim Jong-un back to the negotiating table moving forward. So despite the heated rhetoric that you see this week, watch in coming days for signs from Washington that Washington will double down on its maximum pressure campaign to try to get North Korea back to talks.
Let me ask you a little more, Meredith, about this, the market response to this, or the lack thereof. A couple weeks ago, we had what we would call a safety trade. People rushed to gold, put it to its highest level of the year in terms of price. They rushed to bonds and put the yields at the lowest levels of the year. But now we've receded from that safety trade, even as the rhetoric has ramped up. What do you make of that? Is that complacency, or is that just a market that is looking through all of this rhetoric and believing that things will work out?
I think it's more so the latter. Washington just came out with an executive order to increase financial pressure on Pyongyang, fresh sanctions that is indicative of how Washington is going to approach this relationship moving forward. Washington, and frankly, Pyongyang for that matter, regardless of the rhetoric that you're hearing, neither side wants a military confrontation. In fact, far from it. And I believe that investors are beginning to understand this and watch for this. So as long as the U.S. continues to focus on that pressure campaign, that's what we could expect the markets to. That's how we can expect the markets to respond.
You do, however, have a percentage of probability just in case there is a miscalculation. That's the real danger, right? That there's a miscalculation either on the U.S. side or on North Korea's side.
Absolutely. Currently, we place that probability of a military confrontation at about 20%. And that's precisely because when you have these situations of heightened tension and when you have threats that are being thrown back and forth, the risk for miscalculation on one side or the other is indeed quite high.
Meredith, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate having you with us tonight. Meredith Sumpter with the Eurasia Group. And still ahead, a major city deals the latest blow to Uber. Cheap imports of solar panels from China and other countries hurt American manufacturers, so says the U.S. International Trade Commission. The commission has until mid-November to recommend a remedy to the president. The decision also raised the possibility that the Trump administration will decide to impose tariffs that could double the price of solar panels from abroad. Shares of American solar panel maker First Solar rose on the news.
Meanwhile, Uber has been banned in London. The city has deemed the company unfit to run a taxi service and stripped it of its license to operate. Certainly a major setback for a company that was known as one of the fastest growing startups. Gemma Acton reports for us tonight from London.
Well, there has been a significant public backlash today in London against this decision to not renew Uber's license. Apparently, around 3.5 million Londoners use Uber, which is around half of the population, which explains why the petition has already been signed by around 250,000 people. What people are saying is, look, there isn't a credible alternative in the evenings. Yes, there are some night buses, but the underground trains only run partially, and black cabs are not a credible alternative for everybody. They're very expensive, sometimes they only accept cash, and there just aren't enough of them on the streets. In fact, a lot of the anger here is being directed against black cabs themselves, who have pushed very hard for several years to have Uber banned. Now, turning to some of the official responses, the Conservative Party has said once again Labour has gone too far, and it's ordinary working people who are going to pay the price for this decision. They did concede, however, that there are safety concerns with regards to Uber and that these need to be looked at, which is exactly what London Mayor Sadiq Khan has said. He really focused on safety and security issues when he supported Transport for London's decision. He even said, look, it's not Transport for London that people should be annoyed at, it's Uber themselves for flouting the rules. Some are asking, why is Sadiq Khan taking on this battle? Some think it's possibly to further his political ambitions, despite his denial in July that he has ambitions to lead the Labour Party or be Prime Minister. So where will this all end up? It's not clear, but some are hoping that instead of there being an outright ban, perhaps in fact what will happen is that Uber will be simply forced to raise its standards a little in order to keep operating. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Gemma Acton in London.
And in fact, in a tweet late today, Uber CEO wrote, "Dear London, we are far from perfect, but we have 40,000 licensed drivers and 3.5 million Londoners depending on us. Please work to make this right."
Facebook bows to investor pressure. That's where we begin tonight's Market Focus. The social media giant has scrapped a proposal that would give CEO Mark Zuckerberg voting control of the company despite owning few shares. Last year, investors filed a class action lawsuit to prevent Facebook from issuing a new class of shares, a move investors said would cause shares to lose billions of dollars of value. Facebook shares fell slightly today to 170.54. Sales at Finish Line remain under pressure. The athletic footwear retailer said promotions in the latest quarter caused same-store sales and profits to fall, missing the mark. The company said it expects the retail environment to remain challenging and, as a result, cut its earnings forecast for the year. But the company had pre-announced earnings, and analysts said nothing in today's report surprised investors. So Finish Line shares naturally finished up 5.5% to $9.73. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise is reportedly planning to lay off 5,000 employees, about 10% of its global workforce. Bloomberg says the move is part of an effort to trim costs. Hewlett-Packard employees in the U.S. and abroad, are expected to be affected. Shares rose nearly 3.5% to $14.26.
General Electric is reportedly in talks to sell its industrial solutions unit to Swiss engineering firm ABB for as much as $3 billion. According to Bloomberg, the companies could announce that deal as early as next week. GE shares rose 12 cents today to $24.87. And Phillips 66 Partners is buying pipelines from parent company Phillips 66 for nearly $2.5 billion. That deal will give Phillips 66 Partners more assets in the important Bakken Basin. Shares of Phillips 66 Partners rose almost 6% today to $51.40. That's tough to say, Sue.
It is. And you did it so well, Bill.
Thanks.
Is tough to say. A little tongue twister there. All right. Now to our weekly market monitor, who says she has three stock picks that could weather a potential market correction. The last time she was on in March, she recommended Amgen, which is up 4%, Johnson & Johnson higher by 6%. And Abbott Labs is up 15%. Joining us is Nancy Tengler, Chief Investment Officer at Heartland Financial. Welcome back, Nancy. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for having me, Sue.
Let's get to your picks. Texas Instruments, number one on the list. Why?
Yes. So this is a company management team that was very wise and diversified away from the mobile space into industrial and auto chips. So they're the largest analog chip maker. And in doing so, they lowered their cost structure, improved their margins, and promised to return 100% of free cash flow to the shareholder, which they have done. Dividends are up 25% over the last 5 years on an annualized basis. Yesterday, they announced a 24% dividend increase, and expectations are for another 20% next year. So total return to the shareholder has been quite robust, and we expect it to continue.
Home Depot, I mean, this has been sort of the darling of the home improvement sector. And I wonder, and you like this, and I wonder how much of that is also influenced by the impact of the big hurricanes we've seen recently and the need that the company is going to be able to fill.
Yes. Well, that's one of the unfortunate benefits,
yes,
to Home Depot. And we still continue to wish our fellow citizens very good luck in getting things back on track. But in addition to that, Bill, the company benefits from two things. One is I do believe they're Amazon proof, despite the fact that Amazon is interested in selling appliances and plans to online. Home Depot has built up a very fast growing e-commerce business. It grew over 20% in the first half of this year and 16% last year. But more importantly, the American home stock is aging. Two-thirds of homes are 30 years or older, half are 40 years or older, and the average home improvement cost in that range is about $3,500 a year. So Home Depot, while it has had a nice run, has a great yield, has raised its dividend in the 20% range over the last 5 years, and is an extraordinarily well-managed company.
Our last pick tonight, XLP. It's a consumer staple spider ETF, kind of an insurance policy, you say.
Exactly. Against a correction, no one likes that space right now because the market keeps going up and those stocks are just sort of sitting there. But if you look back on the last bear market we had, January of 08 to June of 09, that ETF went down half as much as the market. And over the full cycle of that bear market, it actually was up 25% when the market was down 2%. So this is not, if you think the market is going to continue to go up forever, then this is not necessarily the place you want to be. But if you think that there is room for a correction, these stocks and this ETF in particular will stabilize with a 2.7% yield, and companies that grow their earnings kind of 5% a year, well, very stable.
It's always good to have an insurance policy, right?
That's
Thanks,
right.
Nancy. Have a great weekend. Nancy
you
Tangler
too, Thanks,
with
Bill.
Heartland Financial.
And I don't think the market's going up forever, by the way. Coming up, why Silicon Valley is betting that the future of food starts in a laboratory. California has been one of the fastest growing states in the nation, but a new study concludes that its momentum may be slowing. According to Beacon Economics, the state's workforce is effectively now at full employment, which means future job growth and economic gains will be curbed by the availability of workers. California, as you may know, is the biggest state economy in the United States. Sue?
Bill, Walmart is taking grocery delivery one step further. It's now testing a service that would unpack your groceries and put them away. The retailer is partnering with a provider of smart locks and home accessories. The delivery person would get access to the customer's house using a pre-authorized one-time passcode and put the groceries in the fridge or in the pantry.
So what's for dinner? Burgers, certainly a popular choice, but would you eat not one from a cow, one that doesn't come from a cow, but from a laboratory instead? Some venture capitalists are hoping that the answer may be yes. Our Aditi Roy reports tonight from Oakland, California.
It looks like a burger, and Hannah Rifkin can tell you it sure tastes like one.
First bite, it tastes like a burger.
But the reason Rifkin, a dietitian, keeps eating the Impossible Burger is that it's not a traditional burger. It was created in a lab.
This is what the test kitchen of a food technology company looks like. On one hand, you have mixing bowls and patties of meat. On the other, I'm wearing lab glasses and a lab coat.
Our mission is to completely replace animals in the food system.
Pat Brown is a former Stanford biochemist who started Impossible Foods, which is backed by Google Ventures, Bill Gates, and Kosla Ventures. The burger's already in restaurants like Umami Burger and Momofuku in New York, and soon it will be in even more kitchens across the country. This new Impossible Foods manufacturing plant is making 1 million pounds of fake meat a month, or more than 250 times what the company previously produced.
We're targeting exclusively meat eaters. These are the only customers we care about.
Brown says the reason for the burger's success is the active ingredient in it is soy leg hemoglobin, which makes it taste more like meat. But the ingredient has also come under fire from some environmental groups, like the ETC group, which questioned the safety of genetically modified ingredients. The group is asking Impossible Foods to pull the burgers off its shelves until it can prove its safety. The FDA reportedly also has concerns soy leg hemoglobin might be an allergen. But Brown says his company has done its own vigorous testing and is adamant about the burger's safety.
I would say that the Impossible Burger is the safest burger on the market.
According to CB Insights, top venture capital firms are pouring vast amounts of money into food substitute companies. Drinkable meal startup Soylent raised $50 million in May, and Impossible Foods just raised $75 million in August. One study says the meat substitute industry alone could reach $6 billion by 2022. Hannah Rifkin sold on Impossible Foods, too. She says she's sinking her teeth into the lab-made burger because it makes her feel better than the real thing.
Usually after I eat a regular hamburger, I feel like tired, feel like crap, and I have terrible breath. And I noticed that I didn't feel bad physically after I finished the burger.
The company's founder says they don't just plan on stopping at burgers. Eventually, the company hopes to expand to other types of food made in a lab, including fish, eggs, and dairy. For Nightly Business Report, I'm Aditi Roy, Oakland, California.
I'm not convinced quite yet. We'll see.
Me either.
That'll do it for us tonight. I'm Sue Herrera.
I'm Bill Griffith. Give me a burger. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Me
see
too.
You Monday.